You are listening to the season premiere of Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. In this, our 99th episode, we venture into the deepest regions of the solar system to talk about Ad Astra. Starring Brad Pitt, Ad Astra takes place in the near future and tells the story of Roy McBride, an astronaut who remains fearless when faced with the most impossible of situations, yet terrified to deal with his own issues. When the military enlists Roy to travel to Neptune to discover the source behind dangerous electrical pulses that threaten the universe, he's up for the task. However, when he also discovers that his father, who abandoned their family when he was very young, may be involved, Roy is forced to grapple with his own feelings of anger and hurt in the process. This week on the show, Screenfish veterans Matthew Simone and podcaster David Peck join us to talk about dealing with letting go of our anger, losing and maybe reclaiming wonder, and the power of relationships. Welcome back to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Welcome to Screenfish Radio. We are so glad that you can join us today for our 99th episode as we talk about Ad Astra, the latest sci-fi epic starring Brad Pitt. This week we are so thrilled to have a couple of veterans of the show and apparently a couple of documentary filmmakers, Matt Simone and David Peck. Welcome back, guys.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having us back, and welcome. Thank you. Greetings.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Steve, did you ask me about my podcast? It's Face to Face Live, by the way, .ca.
I did not.
I meant to. Hey, there's going to be a few of those shameless kind of shout-outs. It's Face to Face Live, .ca, folks.
That's right, yes. Absolutely. Face to Face is a friend of the show for sure, so you can check them out at facetofacelive.ca. And David's got hundreds of interviews on there now. I think you're over 400 now. Is that right?
Yeah, I just published 461. Wow. Ian Taves, Ageless Gardens. You know, really, I mean, isn't it amazing, guys, how many people are out there that are passionate and committed and motivated? It's a TV series about gardening. Oh, wow, great. That sounds really interesting. But you know what? It's amazing. Hmm. And it's on CBC, and it's connected to the environment, it's social justice, it's about cultural issues, it's fabulous. So yeah, check it out, episode 461, Ian Taves, but I think it's on, Zoomer, Vision, Ageless Gardens. Anyway, thanks, yeah, teasing you a little there, Steve. thanks for the shout out, I appreciate it.
No, of course. As we kick off season 6, this week we are talking about Ad Astra, which takes place in the near future, where 30 years ago, Clifford McBride led a voyage into deep space, but the ship and crew were never heard from again. Now his son, Roy, a fearless astronaut in his own right, must embark on a daring mission to Neptune to uncover the truth about his missing father and a mysterious power surge that threatens the stability of the universe. As always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers. Matt, David, what did you think of Ad Astra?
I thought it was an interesting point that you brought up. Right? That's probably in the film's description, but was he fearless?
That's a good point.
It seemed to be a good part of the film was focused so much on suppression of emotion. I thought that was really interesting, and whether or not we need to do that to either accomplish our goals or to explore. He's constantly being analyzed, like the entire film. What's his mental state? What's his resting heart rate? Taking pills to suppress feelings. They have that one scene traveling off into space. It's interesting how much emotion plays into it and how repressed he is as a person. And that, of course, plays into his relationship with his dad as well. So I don't think he was fearless at all. It seemed like there was a lot of fear in there that he's trying to wrestle with during the whole movie.
Well, and isn't, you know, and isn't, before I answer the question, Steve, about, you know, what I thought or what I, did I like it kind of a thing, but isn't that really what the film's about? For me, this is the myth of Sisyphus. This is rolling the boulder up the hill. Life is ultimately meaningless. Maybe there's intelligent life out there somewhere, but you know what? We got to step into it. And for a guy who was surrounded, it seems, by his own personal fears and dysfunction and broken relationships, he was stepping into it. I love the last line of the film, submit. I mean, it's just like there are so many real sort of world, community-based, relationally-based kind of moments in this film that for a film about outer space. That's, but what did I get that right? 2.9 billion year miles away, Mars or something like that. Like that's how far they're going to travel. Like, isn't this wonderful? It's a beautiful, almost cliche metaphor in a way, right? For being on our own, and yet a deeply profound and I think relational film. So short, in short, I loved it. I can't wait to see it again. And I think this is, I mean, it's a little bit of everything. I saw 2001 in this. I saw a little Alien. Mm-hmm. I saw Mission to Mars. I saw Solaris, Gravity for sure. I mean, there was maybe a bit of The Martian and for sure Interstellar as well. So it's like, I mean, those are great sci-fi films, right? And touching on really important issues around what it means to be human. So for me, I forget how you do it, Steve, but you got your thumb meters, and I know you do that near the end. But anyway, I approve of Ad Astra. How's that? and I paid for this ad. So.
Well, you know, it's funny, Matt, you mentioned about the fear. You're right about him being analyzed. I guess it depends on what you think about him being fear of. And man, that's jumping way over the gun here in terms of conversation, normally what we would do. But I mean, he falls from however many thousands of miles up, and he barely flinches. Mm-hmm. You know, so I guess, but so in that sense, I would say he's fearless. But you're right, well, there's so much more.
I don't think his pulse rate actually even changes.
No.
And that's what the military are interested in when they first start to talk to him, because, okay, this is clearly the guy. This is the guy we need for this mission, because he's emotionless. He's not even human. He's a robot. He's perfect for what the military needs and requires, right? He's going to take orders and get the job done. But what I thought too, Steve, just to riff on that a little bit, is, I mean, aren't we all in a free fall to some degree? And this is, you know, and I think for me, I don't know if you guys noticed this or not, but to me, the establishing shot of the film was, I think, the reflection in his helmet, but I actually thought it was an eyeball. That was my sort of this little speck of light, and you can already hear the sound and the music and the score and his build. By the way, I thought the music was brilliant.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Really, really drew me in and built the tension beautifully. But anyway, yeah, aren't we all in free fall to some degree?
Yeah, see, that's what I mean. The interesting thing about this film to me, and this is one of the things I actually really liked, I sort of go back and forth on it, and maybe by the end of this conversation I'll have made up more of my mind, to be perfectly honest. I really liked the psychological aspect of this film. So, you know, you talk about how many different sci-fi influences you saw in it. Absolutely. There were all of these things. I understand why it wasn't number one at the box office, because it is much more 2001 than it is Gravity. Not thematically, but, you know, we're talking, I mean, just in terms of style. And, I mean, this is a film that wants to take you into a journey of the mind and of the soul, as opposed into space.
Totally, like intimate, but deeply existential still.
Yeah. Right?
And what I found fascinating too is he's kind of the only character in the film. I mean, this could be a play. This is like a soliloquy almost. I mean, by the way, I love the soliloquy that last sequence. I mean, some people are probably going to call it contrived and overwritten, but I thought it was beautiful how he's finally come to his senses, if you will, when he's talking about the things that he realizes all. I guess he was doing his was that his last psychic evaluation? I guess I think that's what that was. But anyway, Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I really am looking forward to seeing it again. Jury's not out for me yet, but I hope Matt and I can convince you otherwise.
Yeah, I think what I loved about the film was the theme around connection.
Yeah,
because it's all really around this question of are we alone? And then it explores his own loneliness and his own life, like, all the way through. So, you know, there's this one great cinematic choice that they make when they're shooting, but he talks about how he needs to focus on the essentials, and Liv Tyler's character in the background, she doesn't even get racked focus to in the shot. Like, she stays out of focus in the whole shot while it's...
Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, you can tell she's throwing her keys down on the table and then she's walking inside the bedroom or whatever, and it doesn't even rack focus to her. It just stays focused on Brad Pitt. But, you know, this whole thing about, like, he's disconnected from her, he's disconnected from her father, or from his father. His father is clearly disconnected from his own family, and he kind of says that, like, I came all the way out here and I didn't even think twice about any of you. And yet they're all out there trying to find some kind of connection. Well,
why are Matt, do you know what he says? I didn't even think twice about home.
Yeah.
Is what he says. And this film is about finding our way home. And it really is. And it's about being comfortable in our own skin. It's about being present. Talk about S for spoilers, but the end where he says, I will live and I will love. And there's a pause. And then he says, submit. Done. Mm. My psychic evaluation's done. I'm going to live. I'm going to be in the moment. I'm going to love my family and my friends and those close to me. Right? I mean, it's almost too good in a way to write it. You know what I mean? It almost seems sort of cliche in a way, but it's and it just hit me that for me, from a script perspective, this actually could play on the stage. You could make it's like The Martian, right? In a sense. The whole film was pretty much around Matt Damon's, you know, response.
Did either of you really, really want to see Matt Damon sort of standing there in the middle of Mars as they were driving across it? I really sort of wanted him to be standing there and sort of watch them drive by. Yeah.
And it's like him beside a giant potato. Like, how do you survive?
Yeah, that was them apples. Yeah. I gotta say, you know what? That, by the way, the effects in this film, the CGI, the way it's blended with the real world is just, I think it's stunning. I thought as much as the battle on the moon maybe considered a bit of a throwaway, you know, from a narrative perspective, I thought it was amazing and absurd. I mean, I've never stepped into the idea that someday the moon's going to be so colonized that people are going to be fighting over resources on it. And Brad Pitt's character, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I thought
that was actually a really important point to the underlying themes as well, though, because, and this is something, so I was thinking about this in terms of the work that I do with, I've got a nonprofit organization and we support a school overseas, and a lot of times people will say, like, I don't understand how the two sides of your work connect together, because on one side I'm doing, like, space outreach work, and on the other side I'm helping this school overseas. They're like, how do these two things fit? And and it's interesting because when I've spoken to groups that are doing kind of work on the social justice side, and I talk about the planet and space and seeing the world from above and this kind of borderless world idea, everyone's like, yeah, I can totally get into that. But when I've spoken to sometimes like astronomers and staff about some of the issues going on the planet kind of the other way around, they're like, why are you talking to us about this? Like, our work has kind of nothing to do with this. And I sometimes wondered, I was like, is our exploration of space kind of an escape from the problems on our own planet? Like, I don't want to think about what's going on here, so I'm going to stare through a telescope. And they bring that up a couple times, this idea of escaping ourselves, and that, like, so many people spend so much time hiding. I think Sutherland's character says that. He said, we spend so much time hiding. And, you know, and then they mention, but we can't really hide from ourselves, because when we go to the moon, we just bring all these problems with us. You know, they follow with us no matter where we go. And so I think there's this idea that, like, well, then out there somewhere, if there's aliens, then finally I can connect to something that would understand me or that I can make sense of. But it doesn't really work that way. And that's why I really appreciated at the end of the film, there aren't aliens. Like, that's the answer.
Yeah.
Like, it's just us. And we have to deal with ourselves and work through those things and decide and choose to love and actually accept feelings and emotions and conflict, because it's not going to just go away. You can't just step into space and have that stuff just vanish suddenly. And I thought that was a really important take on it, because I figured by the end they were going to relax it and there were going to be aliens, but there wasn't. And that was the point of the story.
Well, you don't have to go searching for intelligent life. It's right here, right now. It's sitting around the dinner table. It's at your work. It's beside you in the car. It's on the bus with you on your way into work, et cetera. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was something I really liked about the film. It's interesting because, you know, as I was looking at it, if you look at how it plays out, I really felt that it was sort of followed his journey into himself. You know, he talks about, you mentioned, Matt, about you can't escape or you're trying to escape. But there's layers of his life, if you look at the way that he's moving, that he sort of drops. So, for example, he goes to the moon, and what does the moon have? First of all, it's full of commercialism. You know, I mean, I laughed out loud when I saw the Applebee's. I was like, Subway and the Applebee's. I'm like, A, they're paying their bills, but B, what the heck? Well, of course they would.
I want to know what you get in your flight bag when you fly commercial to the moon. What's in the little bag? Well, a pair of well-knit socks and a toothbrush? You know, I want a micro recorder or something. I don't know, one of those things that, you know, Bones had from Star Trek.
Well, the pillow was $150 or something
that.
So,
that's right.
But I mean, so and even it's they almost play it like Disney World, like it's where the Earth comes together. There's a sign that says so. There's this thing, there's this commercialism, but also there's also this interesting view of religion comes up throughout the first third of the film. You know, they're all, you know, it's interesting as people are dying at the beginning. There's these prayers that happen, but even those sort of fall by the wayside. So there's this stuff that people are working through. You know, commercialism, I'm not trying to compare commercialism and faith. That's the least of thing. I'm a pastor, I'm not going to do that. But I'm just saying, like, in the film, they're sort of there at the same time. Then he loses his father figure by the death of, you know, Donald Sutherland, who I love. So that gets lost. That's not a protective element anymore. He can't hide from that. Then he goes to Mars, and the mission is almost stripped from him. They try and take that away, but he fights through that and ultimately ends up being him and his father. So, you know, watching it structurally play out, like you talk about it being a play, one of the things I really liked about the film is you can see that little by little, they're removing these pieces that he could distract himself from the real issues that are going on. So much so that he has to come face to face with his father at the end of the film, which I thought was really, really interesting. And, you know, what does his father say to him? You know, like you said, I didn't even think twice about leaving your mother or you, or I didn't care. And his response is, I forgive you, Dad. That's the only thing he says at that point.
Well, I think it's important, too. Your comment about the religious sort of themes, I think that the spiritual and deeply existential sort of thematic runs throughout, and it comes up in a variety of ways. So the opening line, we've got a couple comments to provide some context. This is in the near future, by the way.
Yeah.
Right? So, and yet I would have thought that once we are at a place where we've, colonized the moon and we're flying to Mars, I would have thought the whole God hypothesis would have been completely off the table from an empirical perspective. Mm. And yet when they are doing this funeral, they actually use the phrase, may you find your redeemer.
Yeah.
I mean, who uses that kind of specific language this far in the future? This is really interesting to me. So this search for intelligent life, this search for connection, still most of us spend our lives in hiding. We're still looking after all these years, right?
Yeah.
I think that's really cool. I think the fact that we are seekers and that we are trying to find connection and we are in a free fall and yet we're going to be okay. But this idea, this specificity of the two, I think there's two prayers actually, maybe three. And then Tommy Lee Jones' character, he actually says that he has infinite work to do. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily means it's never ending. But I actually kind of wondered where that was taking us as well, right? So, I mean, I think there's some really deep connections here to there may not be intelligent life out there, but I mean, he said he felt closer to God, did he not? I believe, mm-hmm. you know, and not in a Nine Inch Nails kind of a way, right? So,
but it's interesting though in that argument too. Like one of the things, and then what is Brad Pitt's response? Says he says, you know, we're all we have. We're all that there is. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to me how the film plays that angle because yeah, like. This is one of the things I was wrestling with the film too, is that there seems to be a sense of wonder that gets stripped away throughout the process to me, because I, you know, as he goes further out into the universe becomes less and less impressive to the people around him. It feels like that. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Matt, I don't know if you agree with me on this, but that last sequence where he's talking, doing his psych evaluation, and help me out here, guys, but I think that's what it is. But anyway, he says something, though, Steve, just to that point. He says, I'm active, I'm engaged, I'm focused. So I would say he's back to wonder. Hmm. So maybe he is the scientist through and through, and 2 + 2 = 4 for him. But I think he also has a huge question mark that follows that equation, if that makes sense.
No, I totally agree with you, because when he gets out there, he kind of says, well, my father kind of missed the point in a way, I felt, because he...
Yes.
The impression.
Perfect. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
The impression I get from dad is like, I came out all this way and I found out God is dead. That's kind of what he seems like. Like he's like, I went out here and I found nothing. But then he goes and and they make a point to show that he at first, in the way that the cut is together, it doesn't show him taking the data back until after. It's like a flashback. He shows him with his dad collecting all of his father's data. And he's like, my father was out here looking for life, but he looked at all these beautiful worlds. He talks about all the worlds, and he's like, he was looking for something, but he missed what they just intrinsically were. There's this beautiful universe out there. Mm. And, you know, and if even if we're the only ones in it, then it means that it's that much more important for us to recognize our value to one another, something that he's kind of missed all this time, at least sort of showing through his relationship with his wife. But yeah, then they show pictures of all these different worlds that he's cataloged, and yet he sees the mission as being incomplete because he hasn't found that one thing that he's looking for. So I think there's definitely still wonder and beauty there that he's talking about through his father's research, even though, you know, maybe Tommy Lee Jones thinks it's a failure and decides to shoot himself off.
Did you guys, by any chance, when he was walking down that hallway to go and send the whatever the heck kind of message it was that he was sending to his father out into deep space?
The red hallway?
The red hallway. Did you guys catch the sign behind? If you went back, you'd see it for sure. But the sign said, crisis counseling. There is hope. Make the call. So, yeah. I mean, for me, that is the film, right? Again, we're in this free fall. This is, you know, it's Camus in The Myth of Sisyphus. It's if this is truly meaningless, then we've got to ask a question about suicide. Why bother? You know, is it about beauty? Is it about relationships? Is it about redemption? You know, is there something else and something other out there? Oh, Steve, I'm so disappointed you didn't like the film.
I didn't say that. I said I'm working it out. I'm on the journey.
Good. Somewhere between the moon and Mars.
That's right. That's right.
I hear you.
I'm on the Fury Road like he was.
So help me out here, because I was trying to scribble some note down. Always hard to do in a dark theater, but... did he not say at some point to the son suffers the sins of the father?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he does. Yeah. Yeah.
And I went. I immediately just kind of. How can you not connect that to Magnolia? And just this. It keeps going.
Yeah.
It just keeps going, and we've got to. How do we break that down? How do we get in? How do we get out of this free fall? How do we not have this negative relational impact on those around us, most probably importantly our kids?
Well, you know, that he says at one point, I do what I do because of my dad, and actually the scene, you know, one of the scenes that, you know, post Applebee's that I really really liked, I don't know why I clung to that so much, but it's actually when he's by himself, because the way that is shot, I mean, it is such a fever dream. And you can, and he's saying things like, I'm selfish, I'm selfish, I'm selfish. And it's not that I like that, But yes, you can see he's really, this is why I say to you, the journey to his father is really a journey of stripping away himself. So here he is in this space.
Right.
And you can see him, you know, processing this out, and he hates himself, but he also hates his dad, but he knows that he's better than this, but he's not. Like, he's wrestling with it out. And actually, just on a funny note, there's a very brief moment where he, like, is shaking his head, and it just took me back to 12 Monkeys, if any of you guys remember 12.
Totally.
Yeah, you know, that's sort of the Brad Pitt my first encounter with Brad Pitt, so he's sort of snapping his head around like that. It was like 12 Monkeys. But, I mean,
little Terry Gilliam never hurt anyone.
That's right. So, but in this isolation, all he can do is process out who he is, who is his, and how does he separate himself from his father but understand his father's influence, like, at the same time. Like, you can see that. So when he actually meets his father, he's surprisingly less emotional, even though he's got a tear going down his cheek. But it's almost a very quiet scene, and his dad is a jackass. You know, like, I kind of thought his dad would see, oh, son, you don't understand. You know, I did this all for you. He's like, I don't care about you. I never did. But he still is able to pull himself out by releasing. And actually, what does his dad say when they're in space? Let me go. You have to let me go.
Yeah. And, yeah, by the way, the log line or the line on Gravity's poster is don't let go. And isn't that partially what Gravity's about? I think there's a very similar sort of relational thematic in this film, and it really, there is truth, there is redemption, there is power, there is hope, there is inclusion in relationships, loving our neighbor, loving our being alongside and being present with them. And I listen, guys, I'm gonna cards on the table. I'm going out to play squash tonight. That my son and I have Spencer have discovered squash. Victoria's going to come with us. I'm a guy who lives in the future. I'm kind of on my way to Mars all the time, and in one way or another. And it's a challenge for me. And I am going to work really hard to be present tonight when I'm playing squash with my son. And in between serves, I'll go to my next podcast. I'll go to my film that I'm trying to make. And, oh, yeah, by the way, did I tell you guys I host a podcast called Face to Face?
Oh,
yeah,
thanks for letting us know.
Yeah. Face2FaceLive.ca. Yeah.
That's what he does when he's playing squash with his kids, too, that's Matt, right. Actually.
But anyway, it's like... fully transparent.
Yeah.
For me, it's hard to be present, actively engaged, and say,
sure.
No, there is redemptive value in this game with my son right now, period. I don't need to be out saving the world. I don't need to be out raising funds. I don't need to be out doing something else or something other. No. This is what matters right this. And I think ultimately for me, that's one of the main sort of messages or themes of the film, and I think it's beautiful. Hey, Steve, just to go a little sideways on you, what would you order off the Applebee's menu, just because you brought it up?
By the way, I should mention that my high school job before starting university was working in a kitchen at Applebee's.
Wow.
Should or shouldn't be ordering there. It also made me feel better because I was like, all this time, like, I didn't think that my work would get me closer to space. I should have just kept working at Applebee's.
Yeah, that, I highly recommend the classic combo, but the spinach and artichoke dip is delicious. So that's yeah.
This podcast brought to you by Applebee's. No, it is not.
That's right. There's a new sponsor, man.
That's right. There it is.
Yeah. I thought there was a hole here when they talked about his father's anger. And because when you find Tommy Lee Jones, he doesn't seem like an angry person. He seems more broken and certainly withdrawn. Maybe almost like ambivalent toward his son, but I didn't see the anger, and they try to expose that by the scene with the monkeys, which I actually thought was a bit out of place. It didn't fit the tone of the rest of the film. And then he goes in this conversation about, like, I saw the rage in these monkeys, it reminds me of my father's rage. And I was like, I thought they could have done that better maybe with another scene that actually had Tommy Lee Jones in it, maybe like a flashback to childhood or something, because all of a sudden, I was like, "Are we going Danny Boyle now on this? Like, what's going on here?" And but then it just sort of went back, and I found that part a little forced.
Well, I mean, they needed something, and the space monkeys, why not? Yeah. I don't know about his father's anger, but I would say this is a child's filtered memories, you know, because all he remembers of his dad is his obsession with his work. And they do sort of hint that he's an intense guy, but you're right. They could have used at least a blurry flashback, because they never give any full flashbacks to his childhood, just a blurry flashback of his father being angry or something. But, I mean, when does his father leave? When he's like 12 or something, isn't it? Or something like that, or 14 years old or something like that. But all of these memories of his father seem skewed anyway. Like, any idea of his dad seems off.
And I guess, yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I was thrown off by the monkeys because I didn't quite make the immediate connection that they were part of the experiments that were going on, I suppose, you know, on that ship and so on. And I went, oh, here we go. Here's the weird alien-like twist that I didn't see coming. Like that, but I think they needed a metaphor to say how is it James Gray? How deep this anger has really seated itself, not only in what's his name, Colonel Pruitt's life, but in his son's life as well. And again, the sins of the father. How can you spend your whole life looking for intelligent life? And what was the line? My dad missed what was right in front of him. He was always looking for all he could ever see. What wasn't there? Yeah. Oh, come on, man! That's worth the price of admission. Like, that is beautiful. That is everything. That is everything that's wrong. Certainly with me, I miss what's right in front of my eyes all the time. And I mean, American Beauty. Look closer. You know, peel back the layers. It's right there, man. This infinite, gorgeous, stunning, mind-boggling, deeply relational universe, you know? Anyway, so, I'm with you. Maybe it is a little bit contrived or, you know, they used it as a narrative device, but I also think they were pretty angry monkeys.
Well, you know what else, too?
Or gorillas. Right? Yeah.
You know what?
Maybe a little bit more in shock in zero-G, but...
Yes. Oh, hey, just real quick question. I don't know about you guys, but it's very rare that I go, okay, I don't buy that scientifically, right? It's really rare that I go there. But there was one scene in the film where I leaned over to my wife, Elizabeth, and I said, there is absolutely no way that could happen. I actually stepped out of the film because of that. But I remember Gravity was kind of hammered by some critics because it wasn't scientifically accurate. I'm like, for the love, who cares? It's a brilliant film. This isn't a documentary. And even if it was, anyway, I've got some issues with it. It's got to be exact. Oh, heaven forbid, you know.
Well,
it's called storytelling, man. Where's the parable?
Maybe the key to that whole scene, and forget the monkeys for a moment because they just needed something that wasn't an alien that was going to kill these guys. The real key to that moment was what happens before, because the commanding officer responds to a distress call.
Yeah, Mayday.
So he responds to the Mayday, and what does Brad Pitt say? No, we have to continue on the mission, which right. Sounds like his dad. So this is the first stopcap that actually prevents him from the mission. It slows him down. He just wants to get to the end. I need to get to this. And they say, no, there's people there that matter. So we have to slow down for a minute and do this thing.
Right.
So for him, maybe the key to the moment is Pitt, for the first time, being forced to put the mission away for the sake of a human being that he doesn't know. Like his father. That would be the only way that I could rationalize it. It did feel like a sidestep, but, you know, since we're talking about connection, it seems to be the only rational, like, purpose for a scene like that. And then he mourns the loss of this guy.
Well, you know, and it just made me think, too, Stephen, and you don't have to go here if you don't want to, but I just think I know I missed a lot of the metaphor and the symbol in the film for sure, but I mean I don't know how high that telescope was or that radio antenna, but you know miles and miles. I mean the Tower of Babel. I mean there's a lot of that going on in the film, and same the perhaps there's some sort of from Gray's perspective some metaphorical value that I'm missing out on that on the guerrilla scene. And actually, I felt like the sometimes I think narration can be, I don't know who said this to me, probably an old instructor of mine years ago in film school, but, you know, narration is kind of a lazy way to make films. But you know, Terrence Malick uses it, I think, beautifully. And I think it was used really well in this film. And again, this is a film about this man's journey and those people he touches, or in this case, sometimes doesn't touch, like Liv Tyler, like his wife. And I too, Matt, I just so thought that was brilliant. That scene, the rack, the potential for the rack focus shot.
Yeah.
That didn't go there. And I went, okay, this is the guy. And I love that kind of storytelling when seeing a film in widescreen makes a difference than seeing it, you know, as made for TV, because the director made choices based on the full shot. Do you know what I mean? I love that stuff. I love the craft.
In that way. This was the one film I've seen recently where I actually regretted not seeing it in IMAX. I thought it was beautiful. You know, it's funny, you talk about the focus in that early scene, it bookends the end so well, because most of the things in the sequence out at the end of the film, I wouldn't say they're out of focus, but they're not really the point. So at the end of the film, she is the focus, and it is, yeah. He's focusing on a simple cup of coffee. He's focusing on her. You know, there is some, the relationship aspect of his soul is open now, whereas so much of his life has been consumed, not with finding his father, because it's never been an issue, but with working through his issues with his father. So now, because he's been able to do that, there's a space for this. There's a space for Liv Tyler.
Yeah. I was going to ask, recognizing that there's the three of us here, we're all dudes in this conversation. But I was going to ask, like, is part of this, like, I don't want to say stereotypically male story, but maybe in a way. Like, I was like, how would the story be different if all the protagonists were women? And is this sort of a story that we ascribe to men specifically, that this is a difficulty in, like, men aren't allowed to show their feelings. They have to be driven. You know, men, especially in the military, there's that idea of, like, you know, emotions aside, we can't show, weakness, we can't show vulnerability, so we end up being isolated from ourselves or from our fathers. And would this story set in space still work if it weren't all centered around men and a father-son relationship? Does this story only work for that audience or for those protagonists? I wonder if it would, I wish we had someone else to comment on that in this group of us, but I was wondering about that on my way home from the theater.
So I just want to ask a clarification question, maybe, mm-hmm. or two. Do you mean someone else, as in a woman, to speak to this?
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. I was wondering if there were women in this group of the three of us, like, I wonder if they would say, you know, this story maybe wouldn't be as relatable because it's typically men that are told that we have to have our shields up, our guards up, we're not allowed to be vulnerable, we're not allowed to show those feelings. And so I wonder if that same story about reaching out and connect would be so different, even still set in space.
Great. I think it's a really great question, and I can't answer it, but a couple thoughts. One is Magnolia, to me, you know, P.T. Anderson, this is a film about the sins of our fathers. So in that, this is wide. This is wide and deep, and it's men and it's women, and it goes way back. And so I would say we all have fathers. So I would, you know, that absentee landlord kind of thing, I would think most of us have issues with our dads and our moms in one way or the other. And I've joked many times with friends and family, including in front of my kids, my job as a parent is to screw my children up as little as possible, right? because I think just the nature of being a parent sort of presupposes that we're not able to cover all the bases, right? Yeah. So having said that, I think a woman's insight would be essential to, well, here's how it might have been different, or here's some of the issues I would have been grappling with. My wife found it quite slow, a little too Terrence Malick-y for her, I guess. But I didn't. So maybe there's something there. It'd be interesting to see the demographic on the film, eh? For certainly the theater we saw it in, it was almost sold out. I would say the majority of the audience was 45 and older. it was not a young demographic for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, there isn't a lot of appeal to the younger demographic with when your stars are Brad Pitt and Tommy Lee Jones, and that's not saying that they're not great actors or appealing. It's just, you know, if you're 18, they're not the number one people you're looking for. But I will say this, you know, I'm not a woman. That's not what I was going to say, but.
Were you gonna do a shout out to Applebee's again?
I was. No, but what does that have to do with this? No, but I would say that we've almost seen films that echo these things twice in the last few years with women as the forefront, and I think Gravity is absolutely one. Now the relationship is different. It is not a relationship between father son. It is a mother child. But it is very much a woman grappling with her emotions but not knowing how to experience them. And the other thing I would say, and maybe this resonates because you mentioned the military, I would say Captain Marvel, if either of you saw that particular film, has a subtext of almost a mother-daughter. It isn't completely throughout the film, and it's very much, you know, about empowerment and oppression by men and whatnot. But the super villain of the film ends up being an older woman that she's been looking up to. So there is right. this relational aspect of how do I, and actually that film, she's told the whole time, don't feel. So exactly. she, yep. it's a very cold look at emotion, and they're trying to empower her to feel. So, I mean, would the film be the same? No, it wouldn't be. But I don't think it's a necessarily male journey. I think it's a stereotypically male journey in a lot of ways, because you're right. A lot of times men are told those things. And maybe men are the ones responsible for those messages being told across the board. I don't know. But I would say that absolutely grappling with our own pain and our emotion, it's a human response.
Yeah.
I mean, trauma and dealing with the loss of anybody, be it a parent, child, or whatever it is, being unable to feel like you can process those feelings, I think that's just part of the human experience. That would be sort of my argument.
Well, and I don't think it's just men who have trouble being present and who miss what's right in front of them. I think kids are in the middle of it, period, you know, and to see the intention and the compassionate commitment to playing a game, a board game, for instance.
Yeah.
I mean, or on the trampoline or whatever it is. And I kind of long for those days. And I think most of us do. Isn't it a problem of the human condition that we're always one step ahead, you know, and not really in the moment. Well, it certainly is for me. I mean, I don't want to. I'm not going to cast judgment on others on that one. But it is. I think it's my life's project is to. I have infinite work to do on being. How's that?
Yeah. Fair enough. Maybe it's because of the world around us that encourages that kind of, you know, fast pace, being always one step behind, that I think causes people to want to leap off the planet and find a different kind of life, right? I think we do that when we, you know, when we looking at science fiction or staring through a telescope or, you know, leaving the Earth entirely and going to Neptune to find another life. It's kind of that idea that we want to leave that brokenness behind, or that there's something about the world that we find is not right. And so to escape. And I think that's good. Back to that theme of the film, right? Is that is it about exploring? Is it about connection? Or is it about escaping the connections that you can't make here?
Pascal would call it a diversion, right?
Right.
So isn't it deeply, deeply ironic that the diversion is the search for intelligent life when it's right there in front of you, right? Yeah. Here's this guy looking for it. No, I can't. I don't even think about home. I have no interest in home because I can't handle that. I can't handle the truth and the authenticity of deep intimacy and relationship. So I'm going to go try to find it elsewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have read Pascal's Pensée, but it's the kind of book. I mean, he was writing right around there. You'd love him, man. He's a scientist through and through. He wrote, you know, 1600s, something like that, right around the time of Descartes, and died at a very young age, forerunner to calculus, kind of a computer, or, you know, created the computer, et cetera, et cetera. But most of what he wrote about was diversion. and about being taken away from the things that really matter. And anyway, I love the fact that maybe is what this notion of intelligent life really is all about. And it raises a good question to me too, to the scientists in the room. I have a friend who would get really upset with me probably saying something along these lines, but I don't know, from time to time, I think the money we spend on outer, you know, exploring outer space, whatever the heck that means, when we've got so many issues here in Middle Earth, you know, what the heck are we doing? You know, are we doing it just because we can? Are we climbing the mountain because it exists, or are we really, you know, using our money wisely and well, if you know what I mean?
Well, you know, it's funny this conversation spun this way. I didn't expect it, but it's funny because this is what I have been reading. I've been reading Brennan Manning's book, Abba's Child, and it's been talking about the imposter, the false self. So this is what I was reading yesterday. I didn't even connect it to the film. The sad irony is that the imposter cannot experience intimacy in any relationship. His narcissism excludes others. Incapable of intimacy with self and out of touch with his feelings, intuitions, and insight, the imposter is insensitive to the moods, needs, and dreams of others. Reciprocal sharing is impossible. He has built life around achievements, success, busyness, and self-centered activities that bring gratification and praise from others. The imposter is what he does. Like,
wow.
I hadn't connected it to the film in this way, but I mean, that's certainly what we see in his father.
Absolutely.
And yeah. And Pitt is fighting and kicking against that. You know, he is that before he leaves on the mission. By the end, he's sort of broken out of that mold.
Yeah, and it's sort of a retrospective view. So to kind of tie that to the previous point about, you know, why spend this money to go exploring, you know, especially because we have so many issues here. I would like to think exploration in the truest form, not in the sense of escape, not in the sense of diversion, but I think exploration in the truest form is always reciprocal. It's reflexive. It's a way to look back on ourselves. And if you look back at, say, the Apollo mission, astronaut Bill Anders, it's one of my favorite quotes, and I'm paraphrasing here slightly, but he took the Earthrise photo, which is arguably one of the most famous images ever taken. It was the first most distant of the planet. And ironically, of the Apollo mission, it's the most reproduced picture. It's not even of the moon. It's actually of the Earth. Hmm. And he says that. He's like, we came all this way to discover the moon, and the most important thing is that we discovered the Earth. And, you know, so I think when we explore, sincerely explore, not to escape, not to divert, but when we explore, we learn a lot about ourselves. Hmm. And certainly, like, space technology has helped us understand our impact on the climate. It's helped us understand more about the uniqueness and rarity of worlds like ours, the fact that it sustains us, that we can't just get off of it and go somewhere else. So I'm hoping that while we are exploring the wider universe, it is giving us a better appreciation of our own planet. If we're doing it, you know, with that level of thoughtfulness, and I think that's why it is important.
Great. An argument to spend more money on space exploration. I love it. teasing that. And Matt, how about a shout out for you, by the way? It's the film. That's kind of the film you're making, isn't it? You're exploring some of these ideas?
Well, actually, and this is where Ad Astra hit me personally, because, you know, I did not have a super solid relationship with my family growing up. Mm-hmm. I felt pretty isolated from them. I think, honestly, my goal or life dream to become an astronaut when I was a kid was to escape. It was to escape a world I felt like I didn't really fit in on. I was like, out there somewhere, I must fit in, right? There's got to be someone who would understand me in the void. And I think that, like, I think that's why a lot of stories set in space are really about family, about connection, about belonging. It's like, you know, out there we'll find ourselves and we'll find the best of ourselves. But after going through the project of interviewing so many people and asking those questions, we found so many other people that feel the same way here that in a way, through working on the documentary, I realized, wow, what I wanted to accomplish by becoming an astronaut, I accomplished through making a movie, through making a film, was to connect, was to find relationship and people who understood you and accepted you and, you know, and understood the the problems of the planet, and together decided, well, we can't leave the planet, but we should try to make it better for everybody.
And that was
a neat thing, and that's where the story kind of struck me.
Yeah, I that's really cool though that this had such a personal connection for you, Matt. I think that's really, really neat.
And I don't know about both of you, but at the end, like, where I thought the movie really set the tone well is that when he's way out at Neptune and his father flies off into space, I felt so lonely.
Yeah.
Like, it really, that the atmosphere of the film really sunk in there. I think, you know, like you said, the fever dream kind of heading out, the sense of loneliness, it was just so palpable.
Well, and that's right from the beginning, right? He's a prisoner. He's a prisoner to some degree. The hallway, the free fall, the mask, everything, you know? Mm-hmm. I thought it felt very, I mean, I think I would, almost the claustrophobia of it, right? The aloneness of it. Yeah, no, I felt it too. It was palpable. Like, please, sure.
And that's
also I don't recall ever seeing Neptune CG'd in any movie. And I was like, hey, that's a really cool thing. We always see Jupiter and Saturn and the other planets, but I'd never seen Neptune before, and I thought it was actually really beautifully done.
Yeah. You know, and when you talk about the moment of feeling loneliness, that's also the moment when he says, what am I doing here? Like, why should I go on? Like, that's a real, and you know what? He doesn't speak an answer for probably 5 minutes. All of a sudden, he shoots himself through the planet or through the gas, and then he gets on the ship and he goes home. But it's not until he gets into that final debrief, he very clearly says, what am I doing here? Why should I go on? Why go on? Why keep trying? That's what he says. Why go on? Why keep trying? And then he goes on his little diatribe about relationships, and he goes back to his wife. You know, I've let go of my father. I'm going to return to my family.
Well, and meaning now is found in the other. Is found in the neighbor, is found in the parent, in the child, in the work that you're doing, Matt, and you know, overseas and so on. That's where ultimately, and that is the existentialist question, right? I mean, that's, again, that's Camus. If this is all meaningless, then why not kill myself? Why not suicide? Why bother? What is there to hope for? Well, the hope is in others. And I don't know, man. I will live and I will love. Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Do you like the movie yet, Steve?
I'm liking it more. At least I'm enjoying the reframing of it has really been helping.
But I so love that about film and story and just frankly about conversation. And if you step into it with a little bit of openness, it can take you to some pretty, pretty amazing places.
Well, the big gap for me was always the feeling of the loss of wonder. You guys really helped that. Once we were able to work through that, I felt like I was able to, you know, I can appreciate. I mean, I really felt the film was ambitious. I thought it was ambitious. I thought it was well written. But I felt like by the time he got to Neptune, I thought that I just felt like wonder was lost. And I was just so sad by that. And it wasn't even, I mean, the relationship stuff, I thought it was beautifully executed. I really thought that was well done. But when they lost the wonder as they were, you know, the search for life and meaning, and I felt like they sort of lost it. Now, they sort of put it together at the end, but that's where I say I think listening to you guys in this conversation has really sort of put that back into me in regards to the film. So that was always the biggest sticking point for me, is I thought that, oh, man, you know, you've sent them out. Actually, the friend that I saw it with said it best. He said they didn't have to go to space. They could have driven to Texas and had the same film. And I'm like, yeah, that is technically true. It could have been a road movie. You know, it would have been very different and it wouldn't have had the majesty of space travel and all that stuff. But I mean, the film really is a different type of journey.
Well, and the beauty of that is you actually could have stopped at an Applebee's. So
there's Applebee's in Texas.
Yes. I'm sure there are. I'm sure there are.
And some of those mozzarella cheese sticks. but you know what? I think a lot of those films have already been made. And that doesn't mean that they more of them can't be made. But I do think the juxtaposition of the beauty of space and the aloneness of it as well. I mean, you don't get much more stark than that. I mean, when you start, every time I think I'm going to put this number to memory, maybe you can help me out here, Matt. How far is the closest galaxy? Like 24 million light years away?
Two point four million light years.
I really thought you were going to ask how far the closest Applebee's was. You brought it up so many times. I really thought that was going to be
true. But I mean, and so on one level, I hear you about if going out there helps us to be more present here. That isn't that what we've just been talking about? This is Ad Astra. This is the film.
Yeah.
If that's truly what it's about, marvelous. If this is about searching for intelligent life, if this is about getting, I mean, honestly, how many years would it take us to get to the closest galaxy? I forget. Currently, of course, we need to travel at the speed of light. But even at the speed of light, it's ludicrous, right? So I just, on a certain level, I go, wow, isn't this absurd when 900 million people are going to bed tonight hungry around the globe? I don't know. Anyway, so it's not, but I love the way you put it, because I think it is largely about that. Isn't that beautiful? Actually, I was going to make a joke earlier, but I don't believe we actually got to the moon anyway. Wasn't it all staged? Oh, come on. They had green screen back then.
Did they? Yeah, but
I know, I doubt it. I'm just teasing.
The conspiracy would have been so hard to continue. Yeah. You know what? Actually, so we had a really cool experience this past July. One of the people that we interviewed for the documentary was Jill Tarter, and she's the head of the SETI program, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
That's an old film too. Do you guys remember The Arrival? Maybe was Charlie Sheen in that?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Sorry, man. If anyone's seen the movie Contact, Jodie Foster's character in Contact is inspired by this woman in real life. And so she basically was the one in the 60s who convinced people to put money into this. At the time, people thought it was ridiculous. It was a waste of money. Why spend money pointing a bunch of radio telescopes in space to listen for aliens? But now, since we've discovered how many planets are actually out in the universe, it seems to make more sense now for us to be doing this. But I asked her, I said, why, what is the answer for this for you? Like, why do you want to know if we're alone or not? You know, and it's kind of interesting because Ellie Arroway, the character that Jodie Foster portrays in Contact, when she goes out into space to finally find aliens, they take the form of her dad. Right? It's this idea of family. They portray someone that she knows and recognize that she's had this longing this whole time. She's kind of looking into space for that same idea of connection. So I asked her about it, and she said, well, you know, for me, it's more about hope that life can survive. That we can get out of our infancy and that we're able to make it past our technological challenges and environmental challenges and survive. And when I posed the question to some of the interns, because there was a group of about a dozen interns there, Paul and I interviewed as well, and they said something similar, but they said it was more like to them it was a way to foster that idea of connection between one another, to recognize that everyone asks this question, am I alone? Mm-hmm. And everyone goes through this way of exploring it. And that search for life out in the universe is just kind of that question, but on the largest scale. That we got.
My favorite part of Contact I love the film a little. I seem to remember it was quite long, but I love the film. And there's a beautiful scene where she's going through the wormhole and she says something to the effect of, they shouldn't have sent a scientist, they should have sent a poet to describe this. And I just thought, beautiful unpacking of all that we don't know. isn't that the line again, too, from what's his face? Is his name, what's his face? Good old what's his face? What is it? Colonel Pruitt. All he could see what wasn't there. I don't know. It's connected, but I'm gonna have to go back and revisit Contact, man. Thanks for that.
It's a great movie. Yep.
It is a great. That's Robert Zemeckis, isn't it? Zemeckis. Whoa.
Back to the Future. Same guy.
Yeah, it's a classic.
Connected for sure. Yeah. I think.
Now, having said that, though, guys, I hate to do this, but we should really pull the plug here and start move into Screen It or Skip It. Ad Astra, Screen It or Skip It.
Screen It.
Oh, yeah, it's a capital S Screen It.
Yeah.
But not a date film.
Yeah, see, that's what I mean. I'd hesitate to that because like when I saw Gravity, it had all of this conversation, and it was like just a visual like craze. Like I absolutely adore Gravity, and I like what Ad Astra is getting at. I appreciate the ambition of it. I would say screen it if you're prepared for it, because otherwise, you know, you're going to find it slow. If you're looking for it to be the next great action sci-fi film, you're not going to get it. But it's a powerful film that's really well written, and I give it all full credit. So it's a screen it with an asterisk. like it's an for me anyway.
What if you went to Applebee's first, then went to screen the film? Would it then be a date night film?
Well, I mean, it depends how good the meal was.
It's true. Yeah,
I bet there's a podcast apparently we can listen to afterwards. Which one is that again? Which podcast?
Oh, Face to Face.
Right.
I've been meaning to bring that up. facetofacelive.ca. Check it out. Yeah, we've got. Actually, I can't wait to. We've got a lot of TIFF stuff coming up. I was able to pull off. It's always a challenge, you know, when working and you've got a family life. But you know, it's amazing what you can do on the weekends and after hours. It's pretty remarkable. Yeah, and still not make any money doing it. So it's a perfect fit. Yeah, it's great. So, Steve, just wanted to say thanks for having me on. I don't know. For me, I'm a screen it. So, but I've gotten in trouble for saying, you know, go to see this movie before, and people won't talk to me for days afterwards. So I'm okay with that, because this is the kind of film that will come back to. You can't not be the same person after having seen this film, and in a sense, that's sort of a trite thing to say, because you could say that about any. You know, media or story or film. But I think this one works on a variety of levels.
I give it to you on that. I think that it really does work. I think that it's well written. You know, if I saw it again, I might come out of it with a deeper appreciation based on this conversation. I do appreciate both of you guys coming on. Thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun. It's been great. But just know what you're getting into before you walk in the theater.
Yeah, many feels.
So thank you guys again. And
yeah, you're welcome, man.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having us and for the invite and all that.
And for you at home, a reminder, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, SoundCloud, Podomatic, Stitcher, hopefully any place that podcasts are available, you can find us. If you go to the website, screenfish.net, and go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More, which is small group questions that you can have if you decide to see the film with people that you see it with as well. We will be back next week, and we will be talking about Joker, Todd Phillips' latest film that explores the origin of the iconic DC villain. And as always, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.